Welcome to Awaken Calls. Every Saturday, we host conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life. Speakers whose personal journeys awaken and inspire our innate spirit of service. Thank you for coming together to plant seeds for a more compassionate society.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. My name is Rish, and I will be your host for our weekly Global Awaken Call today. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. The purpose of these calls is really to share stories and to tell stories, stories that help plant seeds for a more compassionate society while fostering our own inner transformation. We do this by holding collective conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life, those who inspire us through their actions to live in a more service-oriented way. And behind each of these calls, there is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allows us to hold this space. For today, our special guest speaker is none other than Luke Renaud, and someone who really embodies today's theme as music as a force of love. Thanks again, everyone, for joining today's call. Let us start with a minute of silence to anchor ourselves. Welcome again to our weekly Awaken Call, today in conversation with Luke Renaud. Here's how the call works. In a few minutes, our moderator, Nemo Patel, will engage in a deep dialogue with our speaker, Luke Renaud, and by the top of the hour, we'll roll into Q&A and a circle of sharing, where we invite all of your reflections and questions. I've opened up the queue, so at any point you can hit *6 on your phone, and you'll be prompted when it's your turn to speak. You can also email us ask@servicespace.org. This week's theme, as I shared earlier, is music as a force of love, with guest speaker Luke Renaud, a remarkable singer and songwriter. It is only fitting that our moderator for today, Nemo, is also an accomplished musician and rap artist who has spent the last several years working with children in India and around the world. I will let him introduce Luke properly and kick off our circle. Nemo, please go ahead.
Thank you, Rish. I'm just going to start with a quote by Khalil Gibran because I really feel like this shares about Luke's life. The music is the language of the spirit. It opens the secret of life, bringing peace and abolishing strife. Our brother Luke was born and raised in the beautiful, green, luscious state of Washington and has had many seeds of music planted in him through his loved ones, where he eventually started his own band, Luke and the Lovingtons, and has toured the world over. Surprisingly enough, music was not, to enter his life till much later. And it's a really exciting story, and I don't want to share all of it now in the intro. So we're going to get to that and let Luke actually share about that. Luke's journey is inspiring, full of beautiful miracles, heartfulness, service, and dedication to the planet and to bringing light to the darkness. I'm just inspired by this man, brother, lover of humanity, human being. He's a shining example of how to follow our heart, dissolve our ego, and become an instrument of something much greater than ourselves. To me, this is the highest honor of any human being. And our brother Luke is a living example of this goodness. I love you, brother, and I just welcome you. We welcome you. We are so excited to have you with us today. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Nemo. Thanks for that sweet introduction.
Yeah, man, you are really, man, you're living the light, and you're bringing that to everyone around you. And obviously there's a journey that has unfolded that has allowed for you to walk on this path the way you are walking, which is very unique. And I wanted to start off our dialogue with something very powerful. And we talk about planting seed, how important it is to plant seeds at an early stage in your life. And there was an amazing seed that was planted by your preschool teacher that really had left a big mark in your heart. Can you talk a little about that to share with us about that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I would love to. And I first just thought I'd say for out of honor and love for my family name. My last name is actually, it's Luc Reynaud. It's it's French. Actually, not that I mind it being called anyway. I kind of like Renaud too. our last name is called so many things, but I just thought I'd give that pronunciation. It's French. It's Luc Reynaud. And it's actually kind of funny because growing up in Washington in the country, that name became Reynolds. It became Renaud. It became everything. So anyways, I just wanted to give that little
thank you, Luc. Awesome. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. That's why I say I don't mind. I'll go by any name. You know, you kind of do a little bark, and if I know it's me, I'm fine with it.
Nice.
But
thank you, Luc.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, in wrestling, when I was a wrestler, I'd see the guy about to read it, and I'd see him just go to, he'd be like, I don't know what to say. Reynolds. So
you're many things to many people.
That's right. And many of us in the United States know what it's like to have their names be said in hundreds of different ways. So God bless everyone.
Yeah.
So back to your beautiful question and somebody who I would love to talk about, and that is my preschool teacher, Rayma. And Rayma Hayes. And this is when, you know, when I was really little, and I always hearken back to many moments with her as a huge part of what I guess allowed me to dream far and wide and to have ideas that were so big and to not have a ceiling. And that's what Rayma Hayes cultivated. It's a Montessori school called Little Star in the Medhow Valley. And it's one of the greatest, highest education I've come to know on the globe, you know, and it's a Little Star Montessori school. And her biggest deal was to let, you know, she just knew how to let the full light come out of a child. And she would do all these wonderful things with me where, you know, I remember even I'd get to stay at her house. And one time she took me to a grocery store and she said, Luc, what do you want? Anything you want in this grocery store, you can have. And for a kid who's constantly prying in the grocery store for that one, you know, candy bar, that always fighting for that one thing to have the door all the way open, you know, anything you want. I remember I was in shock, and it's something I never forgot. I mean, it was like, you mean anything? And she stood by it. And obviously I kind of restrained myself. I was kind of like, well, how about, okay, these popsicles? And she's like, anything you want. I was like, okay, maybe some cookies. And I didn't go too far with it. I think she knew that I was, you know, like that. But the biggest moment I remember with her is when one morning at the preschool I said that I said, Rayma, I want to paint the earth. I want to paint an image of the earth. And she said, oh, that's beautiful, Luc. Do it. Paint the earth. And when you're done painting the earth, you want to paint the moon too? And I said, well, yeah, yes. And she's like, okay. You know, and maybe after you're done with that, you want to paint all the planets? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, you know what, Luc? You want to paint the whole universe? And I remember I was like, you know, felt like lightning went through my body. And I was like, yeah, I want to paint the universe. And she took out those huge rolls of construction paper, you know, those, you know, about 4 feet high.
Yeah.
And she laid it down, roll. She laid it on this wood floor, and then she just rolled it all the way across, like 20 feet across this wood floor.
Wow.
And she said, Luc, paint the universe, and I will help you. I still remember the electric feeling.
That's it.
And I felt probably the whole universe started moving in me. I was like, I'm going to paint the universe. And it was so large.
That's amazing.
It was Yeah. Yeah. It was such a
just
large
the spirit of it.
Thing.
Just the spirit mm-hmm. of it, Luke. I feel like there's so much to receive from this in terms of tea. I remember this young girl who's been dear to my heart. Her name is Priyanka. She once said to a big audience in Bombay, she said, "We don't need teachers." And everybody kind of gasped. And she's like, "We need education fairies." And I feel like Rhema Hayes really, you know, and it's a great lesson for all of us as adults, that how do we allow our kids to paint the universe in whatever ways they can? Because that really led you and planted a seed for what you're doing now, which is getting your chance to paint your life and to paint the universe in the way you want to. So I kind of wanted to get into that. Wow. Thank you for sharing that, brother. I really appreciate that.
Yes, absolutely. And I just
Go ahead, brother.
Oh, just the last thing I wanted to share is that sweet Rhema Hayes, who became a huge sacred person in our community in the Medhav Valley, and she did this with hundreds and hundreds of kids who have these same stories in their hearts. And she passed on this Monday of this last week. And so this story is a poignant story, and she had brain cancer and lung cancer, and it happened very quick. It was very quick, and she passed on with the utmost grace, unbelievable grace, and positive faith, and our whole community kind of gathered around that, and I just wanted to say that, you know, that we love you, Rhema, and to her husband, John, we love you, John. And I just wanted to say that. I know she's with us.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, absolutely. And like we were saying, man, I hope people can get inspiration from her life and spend space and time with children in the way she did, because to see how human beings can come out of that, you know. And offer themselves back. So she's definitely offered a lot to our planet. What a blessing.
Yes, she has. Rhema.
And maybe we can do a moment of silence for her at the end, as we end our call. You know, that'll be a blessing and a prayer for her.
That sounds wonderful.
Wonderful, buddy. So take us on a little hitchhiking journey, brother. How did you get into music, because you were like, from what I understand, you weren't singing and doing many things kind of musically in your childhood, and I think at some point it shifted. It sounded like your brother and sister, and I mean your father and your sister, people were into it, but it ended up not being something that you kind of latched onto later. So when did that happen? Because music is your life now. Where did that happen?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible because, yeah, I grew up a total jock, as I say, and, you know, music was definitely, you know, music was around me for sure. You know, my dad and both my mom, you know, and her family, you know, and often my dad and my little sister singing a lot, and our whole family, yeah, from both sides, you know, music was really around. My dad was the lead singer of a band for a period. And so it was all around me, but I was into basketball. I was like basketball, football. I was just a jock, you know, and not just a jock, but that was my focus.
Right.
And then I remember my junior year, it's like these little pivotal moments would happen, you know?
Yeah.
I remember my junior year, just a friend on the basketball team was like running off after practice. I was like, "Where are you going?" He's like, "I'm going to try out for this play." And I was like, "Really?" And I was like, "Wow, that sounds kind of cool." And it was probably cool that he was trying out too, you know? And I was like, awoke this thing in me. I was like, "I want to do that." And he told me the play was Grease. And I knew the movie Grease because we had watched it all the time, you know, and sang all the parts.
Right.
And So I went with him to try out the part. You know, of course, I was trying out super late. It was, like, way late in the tryouts, like, the last day, and they're like, we only got one teeny role left, Luke, but we want you in. We'll give you this role. So it was like a one-liner. And I was like, all right, cool. Mm-hmm. And I went to a practice, and the guy who had gotten the lead role, Danny Zuko, Noah Ashford, actually an awesome musician in our community, he missed a practice and wasn't able to come. And then I'm not sure, maybe something happened with his life where he got really busy, but that one practice, I was doing it as a joke. They were like, we need somebody to act in for Noah in the Danny Zuko lead. And I was like, I was in a spunky mood. And so I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. And I think I was doing that thing, you know, that kids do where you're kind of, you act like you're making fun of something because you're kind of too cool to do it all the way.
Right.
But in your acting like you're making fun of it, you get to do it. And so I just kind of like, I knew all the songs from the video of my family. So I just started going like, summer loving had me a blast. And I just cheeseballed it, you know, and did all the moves and stuff. And basically after that practice at the end, they said, they brought me back in a little room and they're like, Luke, would you be interested in doing the lead? Because it sounds like the other guy can't make the commitment. And I was like, oh. And then.
Yeah, like what did the jock in you feel about that?
Yeah, I felt a little kind of like, it felt like a little bit of a mixing of worlds, a little weird, you know, but by that time I was kind of growing into like being able to follow what I want, whether I thought it was me or my old self had thought it was me or not. And so I knew I was intrigued. So I said, okay, I'll do it. And then from then I took it really seriously and, you know, and I practiced and then that was
awesome.
It was a great show and that was and it was singing and dancing and that was kind of like a start of it. And then
I got
really into filmmaking. Yep.
So that
kind of changed.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead. That's the shift.
Oh, I was just going to say, my whole direction was I was going to go to college to be, you know, my dream was to be a basketball player in college and get a scholarship, and then that kind of all changed toward the arts, and suddenly I was heading to UW to do drama and acting and filmmaking.
Amazing, man. That's where the art, so through Greece is where the artist in you kind of finally found an outlet and actually felt good about it. And it really connected you. And then you went to theater school. But from what I understand, years later, you were still not a musician or a actor. You were working on a construction site at some point in 2005. So I don't know how much art had to do with that in your life at that point. Did you kind of let arts go after that or where were you at in 2005 before the
Katrina
situation?
At 2005, you know, basically what happened is I went to college to do drama and theater and filmmaking and I loved it. And I got so inspired. We had this one class that was trying to help us act better. But the root of the class was listening to our breath so that we could be connected to presence and speak truth. And this class took me so deep. It was like where I realized I really discovered meditation. And in this class that it started sparking all of this inner desire to search. And so I decided after that class to take a break from college and take a hitchhiking trip to do a full-on inner search. And then it was on this hitchhiking trip that I was just going to kind of follow with the wind, and that's when I picked up an acoustic guitar in San Francisco, and I started playing music on this hitchhiking trip, and I didn't have any blockers, and my whole goal was to just soul search and follow where I'm led. And in about the space of a month, it exploded out music. And I realized it had been there all the time. And I even hearkened back to a memory back in high school in my junior days when a band came and played, and I was sitting up in the bandstand, and they were playing all this music, and I started singing in my head all these parts. And I remember my brain at that time was like, I think that could sound good, but I'm not a musician. You know, I'm not
right,
a musician.
Right.
And so it was once I released those, took that hitchhiking trip, released any of those blockers, I feel like the river was able to flood through. And to answer your question, I got back from that trip, and I started kind of working on growing music. I was like, okay, I want to do music.
Okay.
And I went back to my hometown to go deep into music and also into meditation and prayer. I guess I was kind of checking out about becoming a monk almost.
Wow.
And yeah, and it was there when I was in the Met Hal doing that. I was working at a construction site back in the mountains. That's when I saw Hurricane Katrina. And I saw the hurricane strike. I saw all the people in water asking for help. And I, you know, and I said to myself, I can't believe this is happening in my own country. And I, you know, I was like, I got to get there and I got to get there to help in some way. And so I registered for Red Cross, and it only took about 4 days, and I was able to head to down to New Orleans through Red Cross just about 2 weeks after Hurricane Katrina had hit.
Oh my gosh.
And
so
I was going down there through Red Cross, but I was just going down to lift sandbags, but I had my guitar. And as you probably heard in the TED talk that I gave, I debated about whether to bring the guitar or not. I was a little embarrassed and sheepish about, I knew if I brought the guitar, I would have to play, and I was scared. I was like, can I play in the face of such tragedy? Can I play this happy music that I play? And I brought it, and thank God I brought it, because that was the best thing
I had.
Thank
the Lord.
To give.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
so before we go forward, because this is such, oh my gosh, such a amazing kind of like train of events that are happening here that you're describing. And I know we only have an hour, so you can go into every single detail, but I think it's just amazing how your spirituality practices. I mean, the fact that you went on a pilgrimage, hitchhiking pilgrimage, just to kind of look inwards, and something triggered to pull a guitar out, a used guitar from San Francisco. I mean, and then practicing meditation, going back home, thinking of wanting to become a monk. I don't think there are many human beings that we can say have thought about wanting to become a monk. And I think it's just interesting how all this culminates, Luke, because only if all those things are in place would your heart actually then say, when something like this, a disaster in our country, would your heart actually be ready to say, I'm going there? You know, so it's just amazing how seeds are planted, how we cultivate, and then when the time is right, we make a decision based on what our heart says. So I feel like it's not just, oh yeah, and then I saw the news and I went, no, you've been cultivating for some time, and then you you know, followed your heart at that point. Luckily, you took your guitar. So share with us this moment in Baton Rouge, which I feel, from knowing your story, really changes the trajectory of the rest of your life. You know, if you can give us a little more detail of these moments in Baton Rouge.
Yes, it does and did. I landed there in Baton Rouge, you know, as I said, Red Cross sent me down there. The time is 2005, and it's just a couple weeks after Hurricane Katrina had hit. And I brought my guitar, and they funneled me to a shelter at Southern University in Baton Rouge, and they were sending Red Cross from all over the country, you know.
Wow.
And so my job there in the shelter, this was a shelter with probably 500 to 600 people. It was in a gymnasium.
Wow.
They're all spread out on cots. You know, there's cots all over the gymnasium floor. There's no space. People are elbow to elbow.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just ran from their homes. And they have just lost their homes. They've lost their community. Mm. Some of them have lost family members. Really, really deep stuff in that shelter. And so my job was a facilities manager, so basically I was the person that walked around and I would just check on everybody and how are they doing. And when people came in, I would give them Ziploc bags full of toiletries, get them to their cots. It'd be a whole family. I'd bring them in. I'd tell them where the bathrooms are. Here's your cots.
Mm.
And then my job was just to check on everybody.
Right.
And you're there, and everybody's sitting, and there's nothing to do, and you're amidst a lot of pain, a lot of unknowns.
Mm.
And I didn't even think about playing the guitar at first. I was just – it wasn't even – I didn't even want to. And then
so much darkness you're feeling. Mm.
Yeah, just so much. It's so scary to even think about strumming that guitar. And I am, you know – but I one day I wanted to do it just for myself, to give myself energy. And I went, I tried to get where nobody was. I went on the other side of the sports dome in the back. And I started playing. And there was just two guys sitting there next to me, smoking. Mm-hmm. And I started playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing Otis Redding, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, just for myself. And he started singing. And, like, the second I was playing, they were like, left my home in Georgia, and I headed towards the Frisco Bay. And they were, like, singing the whole thing. And I had to smile, and we had this jam session, and I got it, and I got the signal, and it was like, Luke, you gotta get out of yourself, and you got to play. Look how happy. That was the most happy you've seen people since you've been here.
Wow.
Like, you gotta do that service. You gotta do that. I didn't know yet that was gonna be the service, but then I started trying it, and I started playing in the shelter, and I saw it, and I saw the way people lit up. I'd instigate them to sing, because when you sing, you empower yourself, you have freedom. And I'd see what it did, and more I started dedicating myself, like, you gotta play. Play in the morning, play.
Wow.
It started to become my service. And and then a group of kids latched on to me, as kids do, as kids, all their energy, they wanted to sing. And the parents were like, man, you rock with these kids, because we need something for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this one all-star girl who was a singer. She was 10 years old, and she, like, you know, I was boom. Her voice was incredible. And so we started doing our own little, like, mini America's Got Talent or The Voice or whatever, in our own little thing with these kids. And we started, and I gave her these verses, and we started working on this song. And this song that I had part of it, the first verse was a poem that had been written by a kid I had worked with back in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
We put together this song called The Freedom Song. And it was catchy, and it had power, and it was about freedom. You'd sing, freedom, whoa, know how you like that freedom. And and it worked. And when we would perform it, people would cry. Old people would cry, other folks, and it was like a therapeutic flush. And we dedicated ourselves to going around the shelter and playing these songs to groups, people sitting there. They're sitting there in their robes. And we'd do it. And I guess I could say that's where I discovered that music and service could join into one, and that music is a powerful force and service that holds its own as a purpose in even in extreme tragic situations, that along with food, shelter, that it holds a purpose. And that changed my life, that it could join music and service into one.
Brother, again, I see these all as miracles happening right in front of your eyes. And the one thing I want to make sure that our listeners can really get a feel of is your transition there from not wanting to play music, because from what I'm gathering is that your ego was pretty kind of like, your ego felt like, if I played music, well, people are suffering here and I shouldn't play music because that's, you know, maybe it's showing off or maybe it's not the right energy. And when you transition, there's something deep, a deep transition where it's almost like you melted. It's not about you. The music is all of ours, and you're just going to be an instrument, an invisible instrument to offer it. When that transition happened, it just started flowing and glowing, it just became for everyone. And that's, I don't know, I see it as something that it's not only about music. We all offer different things on this planet. But when we see ourselves as just a vessel for it, then we can really fully come to our own. And I think that's the message that you really shine from this transition and the shift that happened at the shelter there. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you said it, Nemo. And you know what you made me think of right there is I'm amazed at how nervous one can get in that kind of thing of fear when a bunch of light is about to move through you that doesn't have to do with you. And it's how to open yourself up to let that move through you. And I find it fascinating, and I pay attention to this. I pay attention to nervousness and fear when I know I'm like, oh, that's my signal that something great is going to move through me, something larger. It's interesting that my body and mind get nervous, that it's nervous about life, you know? And, you know, that does fit in with that. Is that Marianne Williams' poem, you know, that Nelson Mandela did, that our greatest fear is not our darkness, it's our light.
Right.
And it fits with that, and you're exactly right. I was like, it was my ego holding on for a little bit, and you said, like, how can I sing a happy song in front of all this pain? And once I was able to move past that, there was something far greater. You know, like Rhema taught me, there was a far greater picture that was ready to unfold. You know, it's like the lines in a tapestry that you can't see because you're close up.
Right.
But if you let go of the fear, that those things can move through you, and you can be, something can happen. The magic can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And magic did happen for you in so many ways. You got to share with us this freedom song, Magic. Please.
Yeah, what's that?
What
did you say?
I was saying you got to share with us the magic that unfolded from the freedom song.
Oh, yeah. What happened next?
Yeah, because there's a lot of stuff that happened next. I know we have limited time, so I want to really get into some of this. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I'll just give you the bullet point, you know, of what happened next, because there is so much. But we ended up recording that song. It was so good. I went all the way back home, told the story to my grandfather, Dave Renault, and my grandmother, Barb Renault, was listening. And he got so excited that he said, you should go back. I think you should record that song. And he funded my trip back and I got my friend Benjamin Suarez, my great, unbelievable friend who has now done just the best things with me, you know, us together throughout life. That was our first big project. He went back with me to New Orleans. He had a camera, and Benjamin and I found all the kids and a recording studio.
Wow.
And we recorded the song. And then we came back, and there's a lot more about that story and the sweet man who took us into his recording studio in that church. And there's so much more I'd love to share, but moving along, we brought that song back, and then Jason Mraz discovered the song 5 years later. Grammy Award winning artist Jason Mraz discovered the song and MySpaced me, and asked me if he could cover
existed.
It. Yeah, yeah. And I hadn't checked my MySpace in a month, and I see this message.
I didn't know it still existed.
Yeah,
that's amazing, Jason Mraz, man. That's huge.
Yeah, and I just seen him at the Grammys. I just saw him at the Grammys singing "I'm Yours" just a couple weeks before, and I get on my MySpace, and I was like, "This message looks real. It does look." I thought it was spam at first. And I was like, "This sounds like a real person." He's saying, "Luke." Joseph Jacks from Harmonic Humanity gave me your song off of a compilation that you donated it to for a homeless to sell in the street. And I heard this song, and I'm hooked on it. And I want to know if I can get your permission to record it and make a smash hit. And I want to share the story and the song with the world. And I said yes, and he did it. And not only did he do that, but he shared the Freedom Song with an organization called Free the Slaves and our dear friend Peggy Callahan. And they took that song to a shelter in Ghana for recently freed boy slaves. And that song became their anthem. And I was sent a video of 20 recently freed slaves, young boys, they're now free, and they were singing the Freedom Song word for word with Jason in video, and they were singing it from their hearts. And that was one of the deepest spiritual, I guess, moments where I felt the hair on the back of my neck stand, and I was watching this video in Seattle at midnight after a long band practice, and I'm seeing that this sweet little Freedom Song that we wrote with these kids in shelter after Hurricane Katrina is now the song is going even deeper. It's being sung about freedom from bondage by the hearts of these young boys. And it's still unfolding, that story, but there's a
brother, this is huge. This is huge. And the reason why I'm saying this is huge is not because of Jason Mraz. That is actually amazing. I love that story. What's amazing to me, brother, is it's just the flow of all of this. You create this, you emerge, your heart emerges to say, I can offer music as service. You connect with children. You give them the opportunity to create a song or co-create a song with you. Your first tour is in this shelter. Most people say, okay, yeah, my first tour is around here, these countries, these cities. Your first tour was in this shelter in Baton Rouge where you toured different families. And then your grandfather tells you, go back and record. You record it. A MySpace message from 2-time Grammy award-winning, one of the more famous artists in the world. And then it connects to all these amazing efforts, you know, to serve humanity, the music does. So for me, what I'm getting out of this, Luke, is that you're teaching us a lesson again, and you're not even trying. You're just living your life, following your heart. But the more purity you offer to the world and in the way you offer whatever you're offering, in your sense, it's your music, it's allowing it to be used on a compilation for homeless people to sell for free because you just want them to – want to support. All of this leads to the magic that comes back and supports you. And it's a great message for us to take, that when we do something with a pure intention, the world will always conspire. Have you felt that energy as you continue this journey of music and service, that the world conspires to serve you as well?
Yes, I would say yes. I feel like when I look at my life, I guess it's been a total example of following your heart. And I am amazed the way that life has led the way in many ways for me. And following your heart, you know, and I guess being a conduit. And
right.
I trust in something amazing, you know, something large. And I think us humans are just incredible beings. I mean, God, what a marvelous mystery. And I would say yes.
Awesome. I wanted to ask you about Luca Lovington's, that you guys have formed this beautiful band, and something very special that has come out of that, which is the Goodness Tour. I mean, this is such a unique offering that you do not hear about in the world. I remember hearing or reading something about, you know, most people do tours to make money, but here you guys are raising money so you can tour and serve. So tell us about that. Tell us about the group, and tell us about this amazing tour you guys are doing, or you have done already as well.
Yes. It's called the Goodness Tour, and it's, I guess you'd say, a direct extension or blossoming of what I discovered in that shelter about music in service. But the Goodness Tour is, in quote, music and art for people facing adversity.
Mm.
And we wanted to take music where it can't be paid for. We wanted to deliver music, live music and art, to people that are facing extreme hardship.
Mm.
And that's what the Goodness Tour does. It's a ticketless tour. And so, yes, as you said, one of the, I guess, catchphrases is, we don't do concerts to raise money for the homeless. We raise money to do concerts. And I don't even know if I said that right, but really.
No, you did. Yeah.
Okay. Really, the main point is the service is the concert, and the service is the music.
Wow.
And so we've done two Goodness Tours down the West Coast, and they incorporated going to about 20 different shelters and tent cities for people facing homelessness, and then hospitals for people that have, you know, we did a show for cancer patients and their families. We did a show for children, you know, in critical condition in a hospital, handicapped, and also juvenile center, crisis centers for youth. And that's what the Goodness Tour is. And it's we've done two so far, and it's something we're going to continue to do. And you can learn all about it on our website, lukeandthelovingtons.com. You can
awesome.
Luke spelled L-U-C, and you can see all the videos. And that tour has changed our lives.
Dude, I'm excited to be able to come hopefully one day to one of these tours. I wanted to ask you, from these two tours you've done, I mean, give us some insight into something that just blew your mind. You know, what's magical about these interactions you're having and the service you're doing?
Yeah, great question. I feel like we have been able to witness the true healing power, I guess you'd say, of music and live music and art. And what I say is that I feel like I've been able to see molecular changes in front of my eyes happen to the people that we're playing for. And I watch it happen. I watch this process happen. It's almost like you start the show, the music starts, and it's almost like you can see the molecules heat up and start to move around in the room.
Wow.
And one prime example is actually two.
Mm-hmm.
At the same place. We played at a soup kitchen in San Francisco called St. Martin's. Beautiful soup kitchen. Sunday morning, 11 a.m., we're in this a little bit of this courtyard, and we're playing to probably 40 people, a lot of whom have slept all night out on the street. And they're moseying in at 11 a.m. on a foggy San Francisco morning, and they're waiting to get some soup out in this courtyard.
Mm-hmm.
And we set up and crack the first sounds of music. And, of course, we try to start out gentle.
Right.
And just start vibrating. But there is, as you can imagine, there is some hard looking characters. Some characters people that are living a hard life, but there's a mixture of so many different stories in that moment. And I remember we started playing and I could feel kind of this like these little warm changes start to happen. And I remember there was this one guy about our second song. Actually, I was amazed how warmed up people had become. And some people were even singing along with us. And, and it was really going good. And I was glancing around, and I always kind of have a little bit of a smile when I sing, you know. And I learned from that shelter
awesome.
not I learned from that shelter not to hold back my joy even if I'm amidst pain, you know? And it's not like you do it in the face, you know, you're sensitive. You tune in to what the environment is, and so it's a natural joy. But I'm scanning around kind of with a little bit of a grin. I look and I see this one guy, and the look on his face almost scared me. You know, he was like scowling.
Oh.
He was scowling, and he was like, he had this intense look. And I looked at him just for a second, and I was like, whoa. And then I kind of looked away, and I was like, whoa, okay. I was like, oh, gosh, I don't know if I can look at that guy for a little while because it was just – there was so much intensity. And I was just like, okay, I got to just keep concentrating on the song and the music, you know. And I knew in my head we're all playing. He's like, not everybody's going to you know, be excited about the music or some, you know, it's hand in hand. And at the end of our show, it was about an hour later, and we had people that were standing up, dancing. We had people join in, and they started singing. They were playing instruments. It's a very integrative thing. I accidentally, my eyes looked over at that same guy, and he looked like a different person. He had all this light. His face was more red. His cheeks were raised. He was smiling, and he was tapping his hand on the table and looking at it, grinning. And he looked like a child. And I remember I was like, I was like, we got him in my head. I was like,
got him.
We got
him. That's
awesome. We got him on board. I was like, we got him on board.
Yes.
Because he looked so scary in the beginning.
Wow.
And from watching this, and there was a lot of other people that happened, I was like, I think music can go underneath the mind and hit this like primal chord in a human that can actually take them to almost a childlike state of innocence and joy. And that's where, that's why, right, you and I are musicians, we call it magical. A lot of people call music magic. Because it's like even somebody who has a story full of pain, in that moment, somehow it can still tap that primal chord beneath the brain that is free, like where the soul is free. Spirit
freedom.
Is free. Freedom.
Oh, thank you, buddy, for sharing that. We have like 9 minutes left before the hour is up. I wanna I wanna get into one more you know, sharing from you. So I'm you know, I'm gonna help us move on, but thank you for that. That's, I'm sure that is, out of all the things you do, when that transition happens with that man at that space, you just like, you're paid back everything you've ever, you know, done. It's like the biggest payback in the world. So that's just awesome to hear that story.
I got Nemo. Can I tell you one more? 30 seconds?
Yeah. Let's
do it. Okay. And this was at the same place. Another guy after our show came back and came up to me, and I remembered him because the second song he started singing so much he was ready to just be the singer, and we were ready to let him. And and he's living on the streets, and he came back to me after the show and he said, listen, your guys' music opened up so much in me. He was like, I was about to sing. I was like, I don't want to take over your whole show. He's like, you gave me so much energy. I decided, I went outside and I got three things done I've been trying to do for 2 years. And one of them was calling my family.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, and just right there, just boom, you know, it was just the boost. It was the boost that he needed, you know. It was like, you know, like a car that needs a jump, and you come up with some jumper cables. And that's what we want to do.
Wow.
The main essence of what we want to do with the Goodness Tour is give free energy, free boost.
Brother, you are doing it. You are doing it. This is amazing, man. I love hearing this. So I wanted to get into one more thing before 10 hits, and it's going to be awesome to have whoever feels like sharing any questions with you and learning more to get on the call. I wanted to ask you about right now, you guys are working on an album. I think it's called Welcome to My House. And I wanted to get into what's driving you to write these songs and what's underneath it all. For example, one of my favorite lines, I've told you this before, in Welcome to My House is like, even though you kicked me out, welcome to my house. And I'm like, man, more than ever in this day and age, right now, these words are so important. And you're welcome to my house. What a beautiful time to use this as your song and album title. Tell us about your songs. Tell us about what's inspiring you to write these songs. Maybe share some of the songs concepts with us from this upcoming album. Yeah, I'm just leaving it open right there.
Yes, I would say always every song that I write just comes from something in life, something that happens around me, something that I go through, just something around me. And the Welcome to My House song came about because I witnessed a moment, an example of the difference between judging someone, just how easy it is for us humans to judge, you know. And I witnessed this one kid that was getting up to freestyle to sing, and I noticed some people, you know, were judging, and we all work to change that in our heads and actually wish him the best. And this kid ended up blowing our minds. And I, you know, and I always thought to myself, why would you not want to see somebody shine? Why would you not want to get your whole mind blown by this love? And so that became the verse to this song, Welcome to My House, that we started working on, you know, and just, why would you not want to see somebody shine? Why would you not want to get your whole mind blown by this love? Then we kept singing it. And then And then it blossomed into that chorus that, you know, every day I keep joy in my walk, love in my talk, peace in my house. You're welcome to my house. You're welcome to my house. You're welcome to my house. And it's really about being the peace and everything that you want to see, but always welcoming everyone to your house. And so we wrote that song, and then in the same spirit of the Goodness Tour, we traveled to a Syrian refugee camp in Jordan. And
the biggest Syrian refugee camp, and if not the biggest refugee camp in the world, right? Zaatari?
Yes, Zaatari. And we went with the help of Voices of the Children, an organization that we, I guess you could say, almost mystically, magically found right next to us in the Northwest. And Voices of the Children took us over there. We collaborated. And that same great friend, Benjamin Suarez, was a huge part in convincing me and leading us into this journey to go to the Syrian refugee camp. And and our whole team, so many names I could list. Mm-hmm. And we went over there and we gave free art courses and classes. And then it was actually from that we decided, actually, we want to make a music video. And we made this Welcome to My House music video. And that is the first song that we've just released on this new album, and it features Syrian refugee youth and American teens singing Joy, Love, and Peace and You're Welcome to My House in both English and Arabic. And
wow,
it's about exactly that, you know. This world is a home for us to for us to share. And,
it's a beautiful, beautiful video. I just hope our audience members really get a chance to see that, because you really, your work is seen beautifully in that video, and you'll really get a good vibe of Luke and the Lovingtons in this. Wow, amazing, amazing, brother. Any other songs from the album, or just concepts? I mean, that people. Are you guys still in the writing process? Where are you guys at now moving forward?
Yeah. We're working on a song right now called, I don't have the title yet, but one of the chorus parts is, I will not be afraid of the other. You know, I will not be afraid of the other. And I just find that to be a huge thing in humanity.
Love it.
Is the fear of the other. And you'd be wrong to say that there aren't dangers in the world, and that there aren't people who cause danger, but no matter what, to have fear of the other,
right,
you know, or do any type of grouping, you know, right. I always say stretch past the natural tendency of the human mind to group and pierce through to the individual soul, you know.
Right.
Because the moment you group, the moment you create an other, it's just wild the way you can see the way the human brain works. Maybe it has to do with primal protection, but you can see it even in politics. The second you find out somebody's for the other candidate, there's like this little like energy screen that can go up into your body,
right,
and they become the other.
Right.
And you watch families fall into it, and it's wild, and it can take over your energy, and it takes a lot of discipline to move past. But you know, I believe love is our greatest protection.
Wow, brother. This is it's just amazing, man. And I wanted to ask you, because music and performing and being in front of groups and having videos done of yourself and all these things actually cater to our ego as human beings, as animal species, whatever it is. It's no doubt that it creates a block for actually the internal process to purify the heart and to purify the mind. Yet I see you and you're doing all of this, and yet love for you is still the bottom line. And I wanted to ask you, how do you, through this process, continue to, what are your practices? How do you keep grounded? How do you keep love at the center? How do you keep selfless service at the center of all that you're doing? It's not easy. And so where is that coming from for you?
I would say meditation is one of my number one tools, and prayer as well for me. I find both meditation and prayer to be my number one tools for, you know, letting energy come and love come, and then exercise. I find to be is a great one for me, you know. And Bob Marley always said, when a man fit, he feel good. And I think he was meaning man as general humankind. When a man or a woman is fit, they feel good. And I would say those are the tools that you know help abundance of energy that I'm not in charge of come through me, and you know, and the responsibility lessens a little bit in the way of, like, if you're trying to think that you have to think your way into things, you know, that seems like that becomes, I remember when I was younger and I, you know, maybe got into the pressure of what, you know, I'm capable of, that I can think of to do. And I find it a lot easier. I find it way more powerful to just let it come through you from the source.
Wow. Thank you, brother. I mean, we can go on, but I think it would be unfair not to let you know, few others in our audience ask some questions and get to know you a little better. I am just honored and humbled and happy that you are here on this planet with all of us. And, you know, my prayer is, brother, to keep offering yourself as an instrument while you're here, and let your instruments be instruments, you know. It's a blessing, brother, really a blessing to have you.
Thank you, Nemo, and I know you do great work yourself. It's an honor to talk to you here on this Awaken call.
Awesome.
Thank you, Luke and Nemo. I was just really finding myself enjoying the back and forth from one artist to another, and beautiful stories emerging. We'll roll into our Q&A session now in the circle of sharing. We invite all the listeners to share your reflections and questions. As a reminder, the queue is open right now, so at any point you can hit *6 on your phone, and you'll be prompted when it's your turn to speak. You can also email us, ask@servicespace.org. So, Luke, we already have some comments that have rolled in a little bit, but I'd like to open up with something that, you know, I myself was curious about when I was listening to you chatting, which is, you know, it seems like several times you've had this way of, you've gotten out of your own way. When you were at the shelter, kind of hesitant to play music, even taking the guitar to Baton Rouge early in your life, trying out for Grease the Musical, even though it wasn't something that you really wanted to do. What thoughts do you have for listeners about getting out of your own way?
Great question. I think I can only relate it into, I guess you'd say, the tricks that I have learned maybe for that. And one of them is realizing that it's not about you. And that helps me get out of the ego part that creates a lot of fear. You know, and when I just tell myself, let natural light and the natural talent that is in you. Let it come out. It's not yours. It's not about you.
Mm.
That always gives me great courage. And it's so helpful. And it's incredibly helpful for me, like even with doing a show, you know, with a bigger show that's in front of a lot of people. And if I find myself getting nervous, and then I am able to settle down by saying, it's just going to happen, Luke, and it's not about you. And let it shine, you know. And I believe in God, and I love God, and so I just say, let God, you know, let God come through you.
Beautiful.
But I think no matter what you believe or whatever your terminology is, you know, like let the greatest talent that you have to share, let it be shared. It's not about you.
That's beautiful. Thank you. We have a comment from Michael Rosen. He says, how wonderful that something you love can be your service, your gift to the universe. Thank you for bringing joy into the lives of people so in need of uplift and strengthening. You give people a voice. Bless you. And maybe
thank
just
you.
It was
Michael.
Michael Rosen.
Yeah.
You know, springing off of that, tell me about your experience. You know, you're obviously the person, the musician. Tell me about this idea of giving people a voice through your music.
Yes, you mean like other people singing or other people expand just a little more on that?
Yeah, I mean, so Rosen's comment was, thank you for bringing joy into the lives of people so in need of uplift and strengthening. You give people a voice. You shared that when you were in your concerts, you know, the tapping of the feet and kind of the spontaneous, this energy that flows through the people that you're playing for, in a way. And also earlier, you know, you mentioned music as an antidote to pain, but also it sounds like it was giving voice to that pain. So I'd love to hear more about that from you.
Yes. Okay. Well, the first part I thought of in answering to giving people a voice is I thought of my dad, Gordy Renaud, and I thought about how when I was little, we would have these, you know, campfires, and his biggest deal was to play the guitar and get everybody to sing. You know, and I think that's a tradition that's come through the family, through my grandfather, through everyone. But he would always just get everybody to sing. And I learned to love that myself, and the power of humans all singing together. And the sing-along, you know, and you got, you know, Pete Seeger, you got artists who do that all over. And I guess that would be one answer to, I love the power of everybody sharing their voice and getting lit up. And I remember a concert I saw with Jimmy Cliff, and he made me so happy to be me. Mm-hmm. He made me so happy to be me. I wasn't watching him thinking, oh, I could never be that. He's so amazing. I could never be that. He made me excited to be me. And I remember my dad even saying that when he would do concerts, he said he always wanted to make people feel like they could do this too. And that became the kind of artist that I strive to be, is like, you know, is exactly where everybody's excited about what your individual light is. So that's my answer to that. And then, And what was the second part to your question?
Oh, just, you know, it's very interesting. You said music you found was an antidote to the pain in some way, is the sense I got. And I also, it felt like the music was also giving voice to that pain. Mm. And I was just curious about that interplay between those two, particularly during your time at Katrina.
Yes, that's right. I mean, well, it can... by singing about pain, by singing about what you're going through, or, you know, or music that goes into that vibration, I feel like it can free it. And millions of humans, we experience this all over the world every day. You know, you listen to a song when you're in a period of time, and that song may be singing about something that you're going through, and it's a relief, even if it's a somewhat sad song. It almost releases that energy, allows you to feel it, allows you to not feel wrong for having it and knowing that others have it. And I think there's so many ways that music can do that, and I think it can help expand. It's almost like you were in these bodies that are, you know, small, and seemingly you're captivated in this body, capsulized, and music can you suddenly, whoa, it's like you can just fly outside of it all and be larger.
Very great visual. That's great. One more comment from...
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say one more comment from online. This person says, Lakshmi Devi Vasudevan, I think talking about you being a guided force with intuition, awareness, and actions that are spontaneous, the practice of being and listening to everything around you and allowing things to be. I think that was just a note of gratitude for the work that you do. So thank you again on behalf of one of our listeners. Go ahead. Nima, I think you were going to say something.
Oh, yeah. It reminded me of an article that I read recently that actually put scientific fact to a lot of all this, and I wish I had the wording right, but they've developed new discoveries that music triggers a place in the brain that nothing else does. And even like normal sounds, they've been able to test it, dog bark, all these different sounds, but then a succession over something like 5 to 10 seconds of musical chords actually like ignite a place in the brain and atmosphere. And so it's pretty cool. It's almost like a portal to the soul. I think of it as soul communication. Sometimes I call music soul communication.
Absolutely, man.
It certainly puts the words to what we all feel when we listen to music. I know, speaking for myself. Go ahead, Nemo.
Yeah, no, and it's so ancient, right? Just like you look at any culture, any past music, dance, food. I mean, this is what culture people, you know, refer to it when they talk about culture. It's so rooted in the history of humanity. So I was actually curious, Luke, if you can share. I really think it's a really, you know, actually, you know what? I want to share a quote by 2-time Grammy Award-winning Jason Mraz. He says, one of my new favorite groups. I think they're one of the most heart-centered bands out there today. This is no joke to get a quote like that from a multimillion album selling artist. So that's about you and Luke and the Lovingtons. What I wanted to ask you is, in this journey of being a heart-centered group, a group that looks to serve, going into spaces that you guys do on these goodness tours, really aligning and staying rooted to your values, it's like the antithesis of the music industry. You guys are walking against the grain in a tremendous way. So I wanted to ask you, as you hold steady to your values and to your deepest belief to be an instrument and to serve and still be a part of this industry, which is the music industry, very egocentric, greed-centric industry, where have you found your deepest challenges as a person, internally for sure, as well as externally maybe, walking on this path over the past years? That's, you know, I just want to hear from you and see what your thoughts are.
Yeah, my deepest challenges as a person in maneuvering through the music industry, Is that basically the question?
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean,
okay.
Considering you are your values and everything are not necessarily what the music industry, you know, aligns for.
Yep, I got you. I would say, one of the greatest challenges that so many artists face is the financial challenge. And, of being able to make a living while doing what you do. And so what happens is there is a little bit of a river or a groove that has been created, like you said, in the music industry that can just naturally send you in this direction that says, this is how you're going to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
This is how you're going to do it. And oftentimes that's centered around the most publicity you can get, the most fans you can get, and the more fans, and that can all accumulate into more sales and more money. And I actually have nothing wrong with that. I just found ourselves constantly saying, like, how can we go direct from the heart and keep doing this? And I found myself having a real hard time with doing the journey of playing in nightclubs and constantly having that be your form of performance is only from 10 to 12 a.m. in a dark-lit nightclub with, oftentimes alcohol sales is like the biggest thing surrounding it.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kept searching for different ways and to go our own way. And the Goodness Tour became a pivotal moment where we kind of decided we want to create a new groove in the music industry. We actually want to create something that other artists could do. And the way it can work is if you're able to go provide these free shows for people facing adversity, and you're able to get sponsorship, or you're able to get funding for a numerous different ways, but one of the greatest ways we came up with is sponsorship, where you're, and this would be the type of deal where the band could, and I think the way it would work is it would be like a social worker. You would make social worker wages, and you would go provide this service, this music service. And if you want the rock star wages, then I think you got to sell out the arenas. You got to get a YouTube hit. You got to do all those things, which fortunately, actually, some of those you can do while still, following your heart, and creating a great song and getting a YouTube hit. And you can.
Right.
You can do that. And we want to do both. But what
awesome.
I love is it's like we didn't want to, we kept thinking like, okay, we'll wait until we make it, and then we'll do these tours and refugee camps. And we all just kept saying, no, we're not going to wait for anything. We're going to do what we most want to do right now. And and that's what we're working on this Goodness Tour to create a model that other bands that want to do that want to bring their music to people facing adversity, they could follow this model. They could potentially be funded. And, we develop a whole type of testing around it, what this music service does. I told you stories of our testing.
Mm-hmm.
But we keep expanding it.
That's right.
Beautiful. We have some more questions from listeners. We have a comment from a listener in California. Luke, thank you for your music and spirit, your gift to the world. There's a refreshing humility and generosity to your approach in contrast with the stereotype of the self-centered artist. And then there's a two-part question here. What is your relationship to ambition today? I think you answered some of that. Second, and what are the inner boundaries or edges that you find yourself exploring at this stage in your journey?
Great question. When it comes to ambition, I had a hard time with that in my early 20s when I didn't know how to I didn't want to have my life be coming from my ego, and I didn't know how to combine ambition with feeling like, you know, egoless or part of a bigger cause. And now I feel a lot more clear about that. And, you know, my greatest ambition is to create the most amount of love that I'm capable of, of creating and sharing, through music and art. And that allows me to have no problem with being ambitious.
Awesome.
And then the second part of the question, could you give me the second part again?
Yeah, it was, what are the boundaries, inner boundaries or edges that you find yourself exploring at this stage in your journey?
Yes, the inner boundaries and edges. Oh, boy.
That's a heavy one.
You know, that is. You know, I find like, you know, having a lot of trust right now between my ideas of where I'm going and then between a larger unfolding that is potentially happening. And some of the edges I kind of stand between that I'm trying to figure out is, you know, there's that whole visioning process where you're visioning what you want to see happen, what you want to do. But I'm also tuning into, like, also, but how can I listen? And how can I be attentive to what's happening that I couldn't even envision? And that is a little bit of a tricky line that I would say I am walking as a challenge. You know, I want to take our band all around the world sharing this music of love. And there's a little bit of a timeline, and there's goals that fit with that. But I'm also trying to open up for the unimaginable and just staying tuned in to the present and what I can't think of and what I can't envision. And
sure, that makes sense.
I hope that's
beautiful. That's beautiful. I think we can all relate to that in some ways.
Yeah.
We have I think this one's I'm curious about this one personally. What songs, this is from Portland, Oregon, from Brenda, what song or songs by other artists have deeply inspired you?
Oh, yeah. I could say both NDRE and Bob Marley come to mind. And NDRE is one that has these songs that are like, you know, she had strength, courage, and wisdom. It's been inside of me all along. And she just has these songs that, you know, really, really power you up. And that was one, strength, courage, and wisdom. And then Bob Marley has a lot that given me and millions around the world a lot of power.
Beautiful. We have, I think we're pretty close to the end here. Just more gratitude flowing in from the web. We have a live comment from Michael in Germany, Augsburg, Germany. Thank you so much for your amazing work and words of wisdom. As a meditator and musician myself, I feel very much drawn towards serving with what I love and believe in as well, from the heart, and getting the message out there. Thanks for the inspiration. Love is the path to true freedom. So another, from halfway across the continent.
I agree. Thank you.
Yeah. And we'll wrap up with one final question that we like to ask all of our guests. You know, obviously you're doing amazing work, and here at Service Space, we always like to ask, how can we, as the larger Service Space community, help support your work? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Make me want to roll out that paper that Raymer rolled out. Think of the universe. How can you
help me paint the universe?
Yeah.
That's Ooh. Beautiful. Yeah. Anything specific?
I guess staying in the conversation and you know, spreading the word about the goodness tour and what we're up to and that model. Yeah. And Sharon, if you go to lukeandthelovingtons.com, we put a lot of our artwork up there. We put the goodness tour and a lot of visuals from our journey on that, and then this Welcome to My House video put up there. And Welcome to My House is actually what I'm really most trying to share around the world, because living right here in the United States and being so close to refugees, I am deeply pained at refugees, other humans, not having a place to go to live safely. And those are our aunts and uncles, those are our brothers and sisters. It could be any one of us at any time, you know?
Absolutely.
And you're looking out for other humans who have the light in their eyes and understanding that you're just looking for a place to live safely. And so we've been trying to share this song, Welcome to My House, around the world. It has Syrian refugees and American teens singing together, joy, love, and peace, and you're welcome to my house. And it's from that place in the heart of deep human hospitality to welcome all people to your house. Not be afraid of the other, you know. And that's, if you ask how to help, you know, helping share that song, it's right there on our website, Welcome to My House by Luke and the Lovingtons, and just helping share that voice all around the world is a message that we're working on right now, and we're going to kind of keep working to share that.
That's beautiful, and I love that it's very specific, so we'll definitely be we'll rally around that. And your larger ambition, supporting your larger ambition of creating the most amount of love, I think that's something we can all get behind. So thank you, Luke. I want to say truly, deeply thank you so much. I think this last hour and a half has been very enlightening in terms of, you know, understanding how music can be such a force of light in dire situations, dark situations, and to see how you have carried this has been beautiful for us. So
thank you, brother.
And Nima for moderating. Really appreciate the conversation. What we'll do now is invite all of us to hold a collective minute of silence in gratitude. Let's remember we're also holding the silence for Rayma Hayes, the amazing inspirational teacher that in a way sparked this light for you, Luke. And after the minute of silence, we'll open up the lines and do a gratitude out loud together for Luke. But first, we'll go into a moment of silence, please. Okay, thank you. And now on the count of three, I think we're all, I unmuted everybody. So on the count of three, let's all say thank you to Luke. One, two, three. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you, Luke.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.